Hello everyone, my name is Jacob Minig. I'm the host of the Behavioral Health Integration Podcast. Today we have two very special guests, Rebecca Erickson and Joey Bredesen. Today we will be discussing occupational ergometrics as well as mental health among therapists themselves. We will be going over different types of workplace stress from the physical and mental health well-being of it. Joey and Rebecca, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
And yeah, thank you.
Yeah, and we're going to get into many different topics. And first off, Joey, would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself and what you'll be discussing?
Yeah, I'm Joey Bredesen, and I'm a machinist by trade, and I'm currently dropping work and going for industrial engineering technology at Dunwoody. What we're hoping to talk about today was ergonomics, which is the design of workplaces so that they're safe and healthy, which has a lot of intersections to psychology, psychiatry, et cetera, so on and so forth. The social gap that can exist between the wealthy and poor neighborhoods within society and branching off of that homelessness, and then menial work that a lot of people can do in society, and then trying to provide an atmosphere by which people can have intellectual stimulation, because I personally view people as naturally curious, and then they like to learn new things, but it's hard for people with menial work in society. So those were the four things that I was hoping to talk about today.
Excellent, excellent. And then Rebecca?
Yeah, hi. My name is Rebecca Erickson. I'm a licensed associate marriage and family therapist, and I am on track to my full licensure in marriage and family therapy. Today, I would like to talk about the prevalence of mental illness in the workplace amongst therapists who are working with clients with mental illness, and how we as a collective who work in mental health need to address this issue, and how we can come together to help and support one another so that we are able to support our clients optimally. So basically, just my ideas and solutions about that. And this is sort of a prep as I'm considering being a speaker for the MAMFT fall conference this year. And that would be my topic of choice if I were to be selected to speak for the conference this year. Thank you.
Excellent. Excellent. And I like this too, because we're kind of going with like a work theme or occupational theme, not just like physical, but mental health as well. And again, I feel like this is going to be a great episode and a great podcast. So starting off with Joey, now, again, is it mostly when it comes to ergonomics, like structure of the body and alignment for like self, like what's the word, like safety when it comes to work and lifting?
Yeah, that's a big thing. There's other things, like we do stretching at work to promote health. And I've seen other things that are more eclectic, like people have had to shave their heads because the strain of the hair actually causes migraines. I've seen other things like people have upper back pain. That's pretty common within my workplace, reaching in and out of the lathe or mill, which are the two main types of machines within machining. So I've seen those two things, and it's mainly upper back pain, lower back pain physically. But I mean, there's other things like stretching that have really made a big difference for me personally.
Okay. And stretching, so you feel like stretching every day has reduced the risk of injury?
Oh, it absolutely has. I mean, I think I've also had to build strength in my upper back by doing low weight, high reps of upper back exercises. But we do stretching 3 times a day, about 15 minutes, and it's really made a big difference. So that's something that I'm thinking that I think would be really interesting and having in a lot of other workplaces where people do manual labor, reaching in and out of the lathe, reaching in and out of the mill, maybe stocking shelves or something like that. And that's something that I would think would be a really positive thing within this society for promoting ergonomics.
And from what I'm getting is you want to, in a sense, promote it and almost make it mandatory for all types of jobs.
We don't have it mandatory, but we go around and we say, you know, stretch time at this time, and this time. But it would help if it was mandatory, probably. But we don't have it mandatory, but sometimes they have a duck call. So they have the duck call and then everyone hears the duck call and then they go to the stretching area. But yeah, there's a whole host of other issues. I mean, I think, I'm on the younger end of the workplace. People will, start to, you know, either dementia or Alzheimer's, which I think is increasing in this country. I see that, definitely the upper back pain, lower back pain, people, like there's a guy named Tom that is going through a foot surgery. So those are some of the topics that I see within the workplace. But I think it would absolutely help if it was more accessible to people to have that opportunity within the workplace for manual labor.
And Joey, I just wanted to make a quick comment that my other job is I work at a co-op grocery store, and I do a lot of manual physical labor there. And I totally agree with what you're saying regarding the importance of stretching, because I think a lot of me and my coworkers, if we were given like a 5-10 minute break every hour or so to just stretch, that would definitely reduce workplace injuries for sure.
Yeah, and especially when you start doing it, you feel the blood rush to your muscles. So that increases recovery. So I think it's a really, really good thing.
And it's also beneficial for all types of jobs, right? Not just like a blue collar construction factory type job, like majority of occupations can benefit from this, right?
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. And yeah, I mean, people have said that it's helped them keep them out of the chiropractor's office, in the doctor's office, physical therapists, so I've heard that, you know, people swear by it at my workplace, and I see it as a really great thing. So I could see any people that have upper or lower back pain or any type of pain being able to benefit from it.
Yeah, and I can also imagine like what we're doing right now. We're sitting, we're looking at a screen compared to like someone with a desk job. Like you're staring at a screen for so long, you're sitting for so long, that naturally does things too. Your body.
I can't comment on that as much as you guys do, because I'm reaching in and out of the lathe all day and setting up machines, but I'd be curious on what you guys have to think about this.
I was actually just going to say that, like, there was a time when I was working in a private practice and I saw like about 30 clients a week. Mm-hmm. The wee bit of time I had between clients, I would stretch, do lunges, you know, stretch, do some deep breathing. Not only would that help my physical body, it would help my mental health, because it would kind of like reset my mind ready for the next client. Whereas if I didn't have, you know, 5-10 minutes in between seeing clients, I just went straight on to the next one, I would just still have the previous client still in my mind. I wouldn't start fresh with the new client. So I really do feel like even just getting like 5 minutes of just breathing or stretching, or even just jumping up and down for 5 minutes, that really makes a difference. And then the therapy world for sure. Mm-hmm.
See, I don't work in a private practice. As we all know, like I work in a treatment center, so it's a little different than private practice where, okay, fine, I'm not sitting all the time and I'm not like seeing 8 to 10 clients in a row, but I'm still sitting a lot, staring at the screen a lot. So I would like physically have to get myself up and like get out of the freaking office and just walk around. It'll get to the point where like the techs would just be like, what are you doing? You're always like walking around. And I would tell, you know what, in a joking manner, because we're friends and everything, like, you know what, you sit in the computer or staring at a computer for 4 or 5 hours straight, and we'll see how you feel, okay? There's times where I'm literally just getting up to take out the trash, doing their job, because I want to, because it's therapeutic and I need to get out of the damn office. So let me do your job.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know Rebecca just mentioned lunges, but I have heard that it seems as if it's the first thing that physical therapists mention is when you go to a physical therapist with some sort of problem in your body, is that they say you just have to get stronger. You have to increase some of the muscles in your body, that can help. And one of the best things I have been told personally, like with regards to exercise, is that even if you don't, for instance, if you're trying to lose weight, even if you don't lose weight, like exercise is still good for you. So it's not like the end all be all. So it's a really great kind of way to meet people kind of where they are. So I think that's one of the best things I have been told about exercise and health in general.
Yeah, I would definitely say that just even getting outside and going for a walk around the block, which takes like, 3 minutes, is like amazing. especially if it's nice weather outside, because then you kind of remember that there's a world outside the office. You know, there's like, you know, people walking on the street, there's cars going by, there's fresh air, there's sunshine. And that's enough, even if it's 3 minutes, just to kind of reset and recalibrate you so that they're able to go back inside and continue on, you know. And that's true, I think, for really any profession. It doesn't have to be in mental health or in machinery or, you know, residential treatment centers. You could be a dentist, you know, really anything, and just take a 3 minute break, go outside, get that fresh air, mm-hmm. and that sunshine. I think that makes all the difference. Which is another reason why, like, being in natural settings, like, you know, going hiking or being out in nature, is just so healing and rejuvenating for people to do.
I have found that personally with regards to even just staring out of a window into the outdoors, mm-hmm. When you're in the breakout room, it definitely helps. So I've absolutely seen that too, Rebecca.
Right. I remember when I was a case manager, this was back in 2019, there was the building where we worked out of, there was a little like hiking trail that kind of went around the building. And there was a little pond that was nearby. And all of us case managers, several times a day, would go on a walk, and our supervisor would allow us to take 15 minutes, like 2 15-minute breaks a day that we get paid for, to go on a walk around the hiking trail, because it was good for our mental health and it didn't score against us. So I thought that was really cool of them to be able to be open to that. Letting us get some exercise.
You know, it's funny, it's a little off topic, but when I was an arms worker, I had a client who I tried to, like, get out more and go on for walks more, get him active. And he tried to argue against that a little bit. He said, oh, you know, when I'm playing video games, you know, and my video game character is, like, outside and we're in the woods or whatever, and then when I open the door and I feel the breeze, it's almost like I'm outside anyways, so it's fine. I'm like, oh. I mean, it was funny, but kind of like all sad at the same time. But,
I just have to make a comment about that. I think it's interesting. Like, I work with people who are, like, I guess you could say younger, mm-hmm. you know, that are, like, you know, fresh out of high school, or mm-hmm. and their view of, like, the great outdoors and nature and is a little different than mine. And they, just like your clients, like, if they play a video game where there's, like, you know, a wood, like woods, or like, you know, a lake or something in the video game, like, that's like their, I part of them believe that that's like their daily dose of, like, getting out in nature, you know, even though it's all virtual. And that, like, when they actually go out in nature, it's kind of like a too raw of an experience for them. So they actually prefer the comfort of, you know, experiencing nature, like, via virtually, which not is all true for everyone, but I've just noticed that some people are like that.
I will say that really scares me, in the sense of, well, it does. Have we all heard of the metaverse, right? And the goggle thing or whatever.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not technology savvy. And they're explaining all these things that people are going to be able to do. And of course, it's expensive. But again, yeah. You're your own virtual person, and you put the headset on and you can go anywhere in the world or in the country. and then just walk around interacting with other people. And I, like so many others, are just afraid of what that's going to look like in the future for our society. It's just like, well, I don't even want to go outside or interact with people in real life.
I know.
I'm just going to go VR mode and go to the metaverse and have fun there.
It's going to be like the Matrix.
Right, right.
Yeah, I'm definitely at heart a Luddite. So I definitely have an anti-technology bent to me in some sense, even though I'm a machinist, like with regards to industrial technology. I definitely have the bent with regards to digital technology. And I mean, there's so many examples of the long history of nature and things that have been designed, if you want to say, by the blind watchmaker, the gradual course of evolution being a lot better than what humans have been able to design. I can give you one example, and we have yet to be able to design a form of breast milk that is able to be equivalent to an actual woman's breast milk. And if we could do that, that could solve a lot of problems in society. It really could help people. But we haven't been able to do that. It's not on par with formula, is not on par with what actual breast milk is. So to think that we're going to like design an actual brain at this point in society, I think it's a little bit arrogant at this point. Yeah.
As I said, regarding the breast milk, I was going to say that some people would argue that coconut water is along the similar lines as women's breast milk or plasma.
Oh wow.
But just that, you know, coconut water, not to divert anything, but coconut water is just extremely hydrating and very nutritious. And I've heard that there's comparisons between that and breast milk.
And that's made by the long course of bottom up tinkering nature. not in a laboratory. So there's something to be said, what we can do and what we can't do, kind of thing.
You know, and just technology in general and with robots. And I feel like technology is good to a certain point, but I think there may be a time where we just like, again, go too far, where there's so many things we can do as human beings naturally that, again, there's no need for that other stuff.
And I believe that like people really like technology and they like to develop it and advance it so far, because in some ways it makes us feel like we're sort of like gods. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. But at the same time, like what you just said, we can only take it so far, and we may as well just go and enjoy, you know, the natural thing of what we're trying to advance. But at the same time, I also see that the appeal of trying to create something out of technology, because then you can control it and monitor it and, you know, have that level of control over it. Whereas like nature, you know, you can literally only control so much of it before you destroy it.
Now, Joey, going back to ergonomics, and you said there's also kind of like a culture thing related to society and classes,
classes. Yeah, with regards to social classes, what neighborhood people kind of generally live in. I have seen some of that living in upper class neighborhoods, living in lower class neighborhoods. I've just seen some of the social gaps that can exist within those different types of cultures. Like I was watching, I think it was KSTP with one of my dad's friends. I'm living at home with my parents currently. And they're like, oh, you don't have air conditioning? Like they're talking about a woman on KSTP that didn't have air conditioning. I'm like, some people unfortunately don't have an air conditioning unit. And it causes a lot of problems, and it's really unfortunate. So I'm like, oh, how do you, how do you live? Like, and it's just like, I mean, they don't have the money at that time in life to buy an air conditioning unit. So I have seen that. That's just one example. I've seen some of the social gaps that exist within society like that.
I was going to say that most of South Korea and India don't have air conditioning.
Yeah.
Whole countries.
Now, is it because they can't afford it, or is they don't want it, or is it a culture thing?
Well, I don't really know very much about India. I know South Korea, it's just too expensive, and they don't have the infrastructure, because they do air condition like their government buildings and like their grocery stores, things like that. But For residential, it's just not very common to have a personal air conditioner. And then like in India, I don't really understand why they don't, but I just know that they don't. And not many of them do. I mean, like I said, like if you go to like a public place, then most likely you'll be in an air conditioned space. But if you're just going to go to, you know, family's home, most likely they will not have air conditioning. And I think it's so interesting, specifically the concept of air conditioning here in like the United States, how it's like, you know, if there's a family that doesn't have air conditioning and then there's a family that does have air conditioning, we almost see it as like a class, not class thing, but like a social economic thing, you know, like, oh, you can't afford an air conditioner, or you have to, you know, go to sleep in this boiling heat, you know, oh, how horrible for you, you know? And it's like, I think it's just so we don't understand that it is really such a privilege, you know, to have something like that. And that's just a symbol of the American society, of how all of our homes are air conditioned, you know, as compared to like some place in like Korea or China or something.
Oh yeah. And they look down upon you. They make fun of you.
In the United States, they do.
Yes. Oh yeah, absolutely. And it doesn't even stop there. And I know I'm getting a lot of topic, but it's like, if you don't have the nicest shoes or the pants or clothing brand, you will literally get made fun of and picked on because you're poor. Like, it's ridiculous.
Right. It's like, let's laugh at people's misfortune. Yeah.
That's really unfortunate. And when I was in a political science class in high school, the person actually, it would be a bit of a controversial thing to do, but wrote a paper on school uniforms, because that would help bullying within society and schools, so that, you know, you don't have the nicest pair of shoes. It kind of is a more of an equalizer. So that's one thing I remember a person writing a paper on.
Interesting.
You know, it's funny, I bring that topic up to my clients too when we do like therapeutic group debates, is that whole thing, and it is to, again, prevent bullying.
Right. Streamlining everything. That's really actually brilliant. It's like actually a brilliant idea, I think, because I mean, it serves so many purposes, you know. Not only is professional looking, it takes away all these factors of class and, you know, and it puts the focus back on the education, the school, and less away from superficial things that distract students.
And I don't know if you too have heard about some of the high-end clothing stores and some of their, in a nutshell, abhorrent racism with regards to like Abercrombie and Fitch. And Rebecca's laughing, but yeah, I mean, they have dress codes that are some of the most stereotypically abhorrent forms of dress codes that you can imagine. No flat brim hats, no gold chains, nothing like that. Anything that would be deemed not hip, not cool, anything that would be deemed ghetto or something like that would be redlined out of their dress code.
That's if you're a worker there.
That's if you go into the store.
Go into the store? How can they censor people that go into the store? I
might be wrong, to be quite honest with you, but that's what I've looked at, is that they have dress codes for going into the store, is what I remember. But Abercrombie.
Sorry, dress codes for customers? Really?
I think so, yeah. I mean, they do it at country clubs. I mean, you can't wear a t-shirt at a country club. You have to wear a collared shirt. So that exists.
Well, I'll look into that, because I've never heard of that before. That's interesting.
I know, younger, back in my clubbing days or whatever, you go downtown. some of my buddies couldn't be let in the club because their pants were too baggy. Or one time I wasn't let in because I didn't have dress shoes.
Really? So,
yeah. You
know, wow.
Obviously, that's a little different than Abercrombie, but.
Well, I can see how like there's, yeah, definitely. So I can see if there's like a health or like a health code issue, you know, like if you're like going into like a grocery store and like you got to wear shoes and you got to wear like a shirt and all that, because, you know, but I mean, like just to go shopping for clothes, you have to wear certain clothes, or to go clubbing, you have to wear certain clothes.
I would love to be a fly on the wall when that scene is going on and a worker walks up to a client and says, you can't be here because you're wearing something. I'm sorry, sir or ma'am, you're going to have to leave.
Yeah, I think that like clothes, you know, clothing is like such an interesting like social phenomenon when you think about it. Like it's definitely a social construct. Like we obviously created it, you know, not, it's not just utilitarian. It's not just to keep us warm or, you know, clean or whatever. But like, I think that like there's so much like connotations and just like cultural subtleties that go into like almost everything about some piece of clothing, you know, obviously the logo and like the brand name, but also like the cut and like, you know, the color, even the color of some clothes and stuff like that. Like certain men's clothes can't be like, you know, bright pink, for example, or, you know, things like that. So there's all these different lines that it crosses, like social lines, gender lines, you know, class lines, you know, all these different things. And it's so subtle. It's like, it's subtle, but not, but it's just so like, what am I trying to say? Subversive. We don't really think about it. It goes right into our subconscious mind. And then we react upon it in a subconscious way by like judging someone or avoiding a particular person because of something that they're wearing. And we're not even really fully aware that we're doing that. Mm-hmm. So I think that like clothing, like almost any other social construct can really like change things. So if we change a clothing idea, we can really change different ways that we treat people or avoid people or get close to people or things like that. And no one actually sits down and thinks about it, you know?
No, it's sorry to cut you off. No, it's very powerful. It really is. So Joey, before we transition to Rebecca now, you're going to be going to Dunwoody?
Dunwoody for the 2+2 degree. So I have 2 years in an associate's for machine tool technology, and then they funnel in the robotics, the drafting, the machining, and the welding. If you get a certain GPA cutoff into industrial engineering technology, so that's the latter 2 years. So that's what I plan on doing.
So for your future, what do you hope to accomplish overall? Like, what do you hope to stand for and again accomplish after you graduate?
After I graduate, I mean, I like the workplace that I've worked at for a good period of time, about a year and 3 months, and they said they would hire me back. They'd hire me back summer work. They'd hire me back spring break. So I'm glad about that. And I would definitely consider going back to that workplace.
Great.
Excellent. And obviously advocate for healthy lifting, ergonomics, and yeah, you're going to do great things, man.
Thank you.
Thanks, Troy.
Yeah, all right, now Rebecca.
Hey, so the reason why I wanted to, you know, present on this podcast is because I think that the more I talk to my colleagues and even people that I don't work with, people that I, you know, provide or receive services from, you know, just the whole gamut of the mental health world, the more I'm realizing that like literally most therapists right now are struggling with some kind of mental health problem, you know, and that can be a problem that didn't exist before the pandemic. You know, it could be a mental health problem that was brought upon the stress that was caused by the pandemic and the overflow of therapists who were taking on clients that were really too many clients that they should not have taken on so many clients, but they kind of had to because there was such a high demand of people who really need help, you know, for their mental health, partly just the pandemic, but partly just other reasons, you know, in society. And I think, you know, now there's kind of like this like backlog of therapists who are now themselves are going through sort of almost like a PTSD from that pandemic overload. It's not really words to describe it. It's just kind of like this huge influx of clients. And now there's like this, things are receding a little bit. And so now therapists, now their symptoms are coming up where many of them are burnt out. Many of them are not able to, you know, take proper care of themselves with handling their mental health and handling the mental health of their clients who they were, you know, continuing to see throughout the pandemic and then currently today. And I feel like no one's really benefiting. Like the therapists are not benefiting from their work. The clients are not benefiting as well as they could. And it's no one's fault. It just is. It's just what happens in our society at this time. And I feel like there needs to be a massive leadership that has to happen that's going to create systems that support mental health therapists and all the people who are working with them as well. I'm not just talking about therapists, but direct supports professionals, DSPs, psychiatrists, you know, medical doctors, like basically the whole health field. I feel like there needs to be new systems put in place that's going to really support the well-being and the health of these people. So I'm not here to, like, you know, create this system. Like I'm just like an LAMFT. I'm not like a, you know, not like anyone that's super qualified, but I feel like
you're just as qualified.
Well, I mean, I feel like what I want to contribute to this epidemic, really, to the solution to this epidemic is to bring, to clarify awareness and to clarify the next steps that we can take as a collective working in the mental health field, that I think that to get some ideas out there so that people can start like putting down like maybe even not necessarily like laws, but just like guidelines, like workplace guidelines, you know? So if you're working in a mental health industry or like a mental health, like a residential treatment center, for example, that there's new guidelines that are written into place that specifically say every DSP for every hour worked are given a paid, 15-minute break to just relax, or there's a yoga tape, or, you know, whatever. They have people coming in out of different vendors, like, for example, like a yoga, for example. I'm just throwing out random examples, but, you know, like a massage therapist or someone coming in whose purpose is to help support people who work in mental health so that they can have the energy to continue on with the rest of their day and be fresh for their next client. So just like what Joey and I, we all spoke about just going for that like 3-minute walk around the block. I mean, that can just like, that reset is just amazing. But I think we can do better than that. I think we can actually have people come in and give hand massages or something, you know, just like your back massages or whatever, like have like a little cafe set up where, you know, you get like your shot of wheatgrass or something, you know, whatever.
That's good.
You know, not to be too hippie, but you know what I mean? And just like really make the most of it. Like take an idea that's a small little peanut and turn it into a big giant bounty. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's really just what I wanted to raise awareness to and just tell people that it is very important that we do this. It's a restorative, it's sustainable. It ensures our sustainability in working in the mental health field to continue to provide excellent service to clients. It's obviously way better for clients. You know, it's a better way to practice, a better way to live. So that's my intro.
No, that's great. Joey, do you want to take a stab at that? I got some ideas, but I don't know if you want to go first, Joey.
Yeah, I mean, I've benefited from talk therapy, and I've had family members that have benefited from talk therapy and friends and things like that. So it's definitely something that is important for me as a non-therapist. But I mean, I would reiterate a lot of what Rebecca said. I mean, I mean, you mentioned just the workload. So I don't know. I mean, if you want to give a number, how much your workload has increased? Do they increase the number of hours? Like, I mean, it seems like the demand has been super high, and I've heard people since the pandemic has started. People, I mean, especially before vaccines, people would just stick in their home and, you know, drink alcohol and, you know, I mean, a lot of other their whiskey and their rum and coke, wherever it may be, but they drink a lot more. They would other problems would surface, marital abuse would surface because of the pandemic. I can personally, I mean, I know Rebecca and I have talked about it, but I mean, I can personally share on kind of with regards to this pandemic now that we're post vaccines is I'm kind of in the vax and relax category. I don't know where other people, I don't know to what extent not being able to see people face to face. We're doing this because we have to have it recorded and it's convenient, but I mean, that's the personally the category that I'm into. And the second thing is that I don't want to let other people's decision not to get vaccinated hinder me from being able to have a life. I do wear a mask occasionally. And I do, I did participate strictly in lockdown, when, the pandemic started to come about, but that's where I'm at. I don't know if other people wanted to discuss. I don't know how that's affecting you two, but it affected me for a while, and not being able to have a social life in quarantine can really mess with your mind quite a bit.
Yeah. Thanks, Joy. In regards to the vaccinations and wearing masks, I would have to say that the majority of time that I spent in prior practice during the pandemic, a lot of my clients wanted to see me in person, actually, which I thought was surprising, because I thought to myself, wow, they're really taking a risk, especially the clients who are children want to see me in person. But then the more I thought about it, the more I understood that there's these people who are just isolated in their home, and, you know, they're trying to have a meaningful relationship with the therapist, and the last thing they want to do is have yet another Zoom call with the therapist. And so I agreed to meet with them in person in the office, and it was a very good experience. And everyone was masked, you know, and kept social distancing and everything. But I have to say that for me personally, the pandemic did not really hugely affect how I conducted therapy, whereas most of my colleagues were 100% remote or virtual, 100%. And I was one of the few colleagues that saw people in person. Ironically, a number of my colleagues got COVID and I have never gotten COVID. So I thought that was kind of funny. Not funny, but I was like, oh, how funny, you know, like, it's strange. I've never gotten COVID and I'm the only one that sees people in person. Answering your question or your comment, Joey, I think that I feel like it's pretty safe to say that most of my colleagues primarily were remote with their clients and continue to be remote to this day. And then I'm kind of hybrid. I sort of like see people in person and also remote, depending on whatever my client wants. So if my client wants to be remote, then I'm happy to do that too. I just found it interesting how people were so thirsty for human contact that they were willing to potentially risk themselves of getting COVID.
Yeah, we're talking about the self-interest of... and I don't equate that with selfishness. Self-interest is not no. selfishness. So the self-interest of therapists. So I asked the question with regards to having satisfaction from your work and the benefit that therapists have from working and things like that. I ask, is virtual good for them? Two or is it what are the yeah what's for the therapist what's the oh. given the take between going virtual versus going in person for the therapist?
Yeah, I had a supervision session on this. I met with about five other therapists plus a supervisor. We had this very discussion, and the consensus was pretty much all the therapists prefer to meet in person. However, they felt that it was safer meeting virtually and that they were willing to meet in person depending on what the client's state of being was. Like if the client was going through a particularly challenging time and they really needed that like personal closeness, you know, then the therapists were happy to meet with them in person. Or in situations where either the therapist and the client are ill, you know, then obviously like everyone preferred to meet remotely, or inclement weather, you know, I mean, so there's lots of different factors, but I'd say the general consensus from that group that I was in was that everyone preferred to meet in person, but they were concerned about it. So they would generally resort to remote.
They were concerned about COVID is what you're saying.
Right, right. They were concerned about COVID, but when you ask them, like, what would you prefer to do? They would actually prefer to meet in person, but they're kind of like their inhibition, like they're like a little bit nervous about that. So then they just would more resort to seeing their clients remotely, unless their client specifically said, no, I need to see you in person. Then they, obviously they would like, you know, do what they could to see the client in person. So that was just kind of the general idea for the group that I was in. So.
Oh, absolutely. Well, if you want me to throw my two cents on this, I think there's so many factors to consider, and I'm such a practical guy. And again, going through this pandemic, it's okay. Like, what's the problem? How we fix it? Self-care. Yes, that's all important. Just the other day, though, I heard this really interesting quote where this therapist was actually taking a stand and saying self-care isn't always like the answer. It's like, hypothetically, you give me 50 clients, self-care is not going to do shit. Excuse my language. Right. But that's what the companies will tell you. If you're just stressed out, overloaded, well, you need to work on your self-care. It's like a broke person who's bad with money. It's like, well, yeah, because they don't make hardly any money. So of course they're not going to be the best with money.
Right. You know? That's a really good point you're saying. And I feel like that's the kind of abusive behavior of industry, companies in this industry that they try to get away with. And I say get away with because they're literally getting away with it. They're getting away with enslaving, in my opinion, therapists. It feels like puppy mill labor, you know? And like the last agency I was with, they expected me to have 38 clients a week, which 20 clients is a lot. 20 clients is full time. 38 is, and I don't know, 50, that's like unbearable. I don't know how that person did that, but like, I just have to say, and I'm not afraid to say it, that I think that is abuse.
Yeah.
That is abuse of a person. It would be like going into a, you know, corporate company. Like, let's say you want to work in like a financial, like as a banker, right? And you sign your contract and then your boss comes up to you and says, oh, you know, actually, you know, I just found out this week that we're going to have to change your schedule. We have to add on 100 more hours. Yep. You're going to work that, right?
That happens so much in this field. It's that's not kind even of funny. What it's like it happens for us. So much.
That's kind of what it's like for us. Even though in like the rest of the world, people think of 38 hours as, oh, you're having full time. And but it's, we're dealing with human beings here. You know, it's not like it's like we just cash one person in, move them to the side, cash one person. You know, we're working with human living people. You can't just, you know, see 8 people in a row for 8 hours and not eat or go to the bathroom or take notes. Like, it just doesn't work like that.
Well, just the documentation alone is just documentation.
And there's I've seen EHRs, like electronic health records, that are trying to like solve the problem by being like extra efficient. Like, oh, it only takes you 2 minutes to do your notes. It's like, that's not going to solve the problem, you know, because if it takes you 2 minutes to do a note, that gives companies more license to give you, you know, 10 more clients because, oh, you're spending only 2 minutes on a note. And I don't mean to sound like so negative and, you know, critical or anything, but I just really feel like that is where the problem is. It's these industries that are just abusing therapists.
Well, maybe we do need to be critical. Maybe we do need to push back.
Okay. Yeah. That I will be first in line to criticize because I've been a victim of it. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, can I bring up the whole topic? I mean, like, I could talk about my experience in my industry with regards to the topic of labor unions, whether or not labor unions are necessary. That's typically and historically what have been relied upon for workers that don't feel represented. I've had my problems with labor unions working in manufacturing. And the main problem I've had, and I've had friends that have had the same experience working in HVAC, is they have problems getting a job within a labor union. It's just, I mean, on one end, they say like they represent workers, and I understand that. On the other end, they represent They act as cartels, and they kind of control and they restrict kind of the jobs and who they go to. So I understand both points of view, but I'd be curious what you two think about the whole issue about having professional representation for the workplace conditions and wages of therapists. I mean, that's historically what it goes to, and what you think about that topic.
I don't know about you, part of me would like that, but on the other hand, it's like there's really, through my experience, not a lot of unions that work with treatment centers or therapists. There's very few, I'll say that, in my experience.
So I think that, like, oh, sorry, Jacob, were you finished? No. Okay, so I think that it would be challenging because I think what drives these organizations to give you so many clients is because the more clients you take, the more claims you submit, the more the company gets paid. The more the company gets paid, the more therapists they can hire, the more clients they can take, the more the company gets paid. So, I mean, I think that, like, if you were to have a union or some kind of, like, regulation system, the people that would argue the most with it would be, well, it would be obviously the owner of the organization, but I think that they'd have to struggle and fight with the insurance companies, which to me sounds like a crazy thing. Like, I would not want to be in the middle of that because there's so many insurance companies. I mean, there's like many, many, many of them, and they all have their own set of ways of reimbursing and regulating things. And, you know, and then when you have therapists who are working as independent contractors who are trying to get credentialed through these insurance companies, their like license and their experience and, you know, all their credentialing things that they go through, that's even a whole messy mix. So to have like a single corporation or a single organization come in and regulate all this, I don't know how it would happen. I don't know how. It's like taking like chaos and trying to organize it. I mean, it could be done, but you'd have to have like a stream, like a main, like a just one huge like corporation come in and be like, all right, this is how it's going to go for all therapists in the state of Minnesota or in this county or in the United States, you know, and they'd have to have like this streamlined thing. And I don't know if there's insurance companies that'd be willing to give up their liberties to do that because mm-hmm. they're their own companies. They're like their own private interest groups, you know what I mean? So I just don't know if it would work.
Yeah, and union busting is definitely a thing within this country. It's definitely a struggle, if it's a struggle worth having, but the management comes down on and tinkers with elections or something like that. But I mean, it's a vote. I think the nurses in Mankato voted against the union. So things became, I don't know what their motives were for voting against it, but I think the nurses and the medical workers in Fairview had like a 1-day strike, so they seemed favorable to the union. So it can be complex on what's in the best interest of the workers, but it's definitely an uphill battle if it's a battle worth having for the well-being of workers, and it doesn't necessarily equate with benefiting management, but it benefits workers.
You know, I can see it happening more likely if we had a universal healthcare system. Like if we did away with all these like individual insurance companies and had just like the United States healthcare system or something like that, you know, I can see how having a unionized regulating board to regulate all therapists in, you know, by county or by state or by the country could potentially work, but there would have to be a big change in the entire country's healthcare system. And it wouldn't just affect mental health. I think it could also affect, you know, like physical health, you know, medical health, you know, but I don't know. Some people would be probably really against that.
Yeah. And I think they call that Medicare for all is the policy. So universal, if it's ran all by the government, the health insurance system, it would be called Medicare for all.
Yeah, Medicare for all. I can see how a lot of insurance companies would fight that tooth and nail.
You know,
but I mean, or maybe they would just conjoin together into one giant insurance company. I don't know. But yeah, so I think that definitely you're getting on the right track, Jacob. How your colleague or your client said self-care is bullshit or not enough. You know, I think that when in a toxic environment, healthcare, or when in a toxic environment, self-care is bullshit, because how can you take care of yourself when you have 50 clients? That's just like not possible.
And that was just a hypothetical, by the way.
Oh, I thought that actually happened.
No. But no, and I always like using the saying too, and it's like, okay, we're in a tough field in itself, dealing with clients with severe trauma, addiction issues.
Yeah.
You know, experiencing that trauma as they're expressing with them, being in the moment, that's hard in itself.
Yeah.
But to make matters even worse, you could work with toxic coworkers who I've been a part of some really bad situations. I've heard worse, but like you said, it's extremely toxic. And how are you supposed to help clients when you're in a toxic workplace?
Yeah. So like personally, what I've done with that is because I've worked in many toxic workplaces, and my solution for myself was to branch off independently. Although not everyone has that freedom or that ability, but I basically created my own practice and started that in 2020. And then with that practice, I joined a group practice that's obviously not my own, but a different one. And this clinical director offered to add me on to his practice under my practice's name, like not me, but like my practice's name, so that my practice, the LLC, could still stay in intact. And essentially I could like practice, but use his license to reimburse, to like get insurance reimbursements, but still have my own like practice. So it was really cool how that worked out. It took almost 3 years of dabbling in many different organizations to get to the point of where I have this freedom now. But not everyone has that luxury is what I'm trying to say, though. Like there's some people who either don't know how to set up a practice, or they're scared to, or like maybe they don't have their associate license or their license at all or anything like that. Or maybe they just don't want that, you know, and that's fine.
Have we ever figured that out? Remember when I asked you, like, when you graduate your master's, do you need to have a year in and like your 1 year licensure, or could you own a private practice right away? But obviously everything has to be in cash.
You can own your practice. You can own your practice even when you're in grad school. You just can't call yourself a therapist.
Wellness coach.
If you just, what was that?
Wellness coach.
Yep. You can call yourself a coach. If you are in your graduate school and you, or excuse me, I'm sorry, cross that. If you are graduated, right? So you have your master's.
Yes.
Before you take your state, your
license exam
to get your associates, you know, then you technically can have a practice and do a cash practice and call yourself a coach. You technically can do that. At least in my board, I can do that. I don't know about yours.
So you would have to call yourself a coach. You can't just say you're a therapist.
Yeah. Like, no, you can't call yourself a therapist but now because I have my associates, like my LA MFT, I can technically call myself a psychotherapist. Technically.
Okay.
I can't call myself a licensed marriage and family therapist. I can't call myself a psychiatrist. I mean, I'm obviously not like a psychiatrist, psychologist, anything like that. I can't do that, but I can call myself a psychotherapist and I can have a practice. I could have had a practice when I just had my MA under the title of coach. So it's hard though, because not many people are willing to pay like, you know, $120 for an intake when you're just, you know, when you don't have your license.
You know, it's funny. I'm a podcaster when it comes to like therapy podcasts, and they talk about this exact example. Like, well, like you said, Rebecca, you can actually do it. Like you can have the ability to run your private practice when you graduate your master's. It's just very risky is, I guess, what we're both trying to say is it, yes, you can do it, but good luck.
And well, so here's the thing. You can't just do it. Like you have to also, if you're seeing clients, you have to see a supervisor. You can't just go off on your own. So when I started my practice in 2020, the Hayreen counseling, I was an LAMFT and I saw a supervisor who was board approved by the board of LMFT. And I saw him every 10 clients I had, I saw him for an hour. And that is what the board, I looked it up online. That's what the board requested, required. I did exactly what the board said and I was good. And I charged $200 an hour. I made $200 an hour. I mean, I made decent money and it was all mine. I didn't have to commit cuts. I could just, of course I put shell aside some for taxes and all that, but yeah, it was nice. It was a wonderful experience. And actually having that practice open up doors for me to join other practices, which is what I did later on then. So.
And that's why I'm so motivated to like do my own thing too, because, well, again, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm assuming that I'll be less stressful because of the fact that I won't be working with coworkers. If I make a mistake, it's on me.
Yes.
And obviously I know working with insurance companies is not always a picnic. So I have that to look forward to, but I get the sense of relief, like, oh, it's just me. Okay, good. No workplace drama, no nothing. All right.
That's the nice thing about working on your own. But the not nice thing is that, like what you said, it's all on you. So like if you mess up with a client somehow, like let's say you're sick or you're late or something and the client's upset because you missed an appointment or something, you lost that client. You don't have that money anymore. You know, that's on you. And that person's going to go and talk to their friend, say, hey, don't see Jacob. I'm not saying like literally, but they might. So it's like full accountability. You have to like take full accountability for every single thing that you do, but at the same time you get all the benefits. So yeah, I personally like it. Some people it's not for them and that's totally fine. I actually kind of attribute it to people who have an entrepreneurial spirit, which is what I have. They tend to thrive in this type of working environment. Mm-hmm. Whereas people who would rather just get a paycheck and go home, which is fine, they tend to see this as too high risk, too scary. So,
so I want to go down a different avenue, and I feel like this is something we can all relate to. Like in any type of workplace, you know, obviously an individual going through severe mental health issues, there's usually like an occupational assistance line, right? Where you can call to get help.
For people who live in Minnesota, who live in Hennepin County, my go-to line, I shouldn't say go-to, but the hotline that I usually call is COPE, Hennepin County COPE. I find them to be very helpful and they have so many resources. And they have a crisis mobile team that can come out and see you in your home if you need to have extra help.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of the times that human resources in a business, have had to pick up the slack for kind of difficult situations that come about. In one case, a guy taking a technical problem very personally and then saying, oh, to hell with the company. Like, I'm like, it's a technical problem. It's not a social problem. It's not a personal problem. Don't take it so personally. So, and then started yelling and then the HR had to walk the guy out, or a guy that had some drinking problems and would get a DWI and show up late for work the next day because he's in jail. Like, so I've seen that. And then I've seen HR having to pick up the slack within a corporate company, for problems that come about. So, I mean, helplines would be nice. I don't think we have one at my company right now. But yeah, helplines would maybe be helpful. They do have them at Dunwoody though.
Yeah, I was gonna say a lot of companies have EAP programs, employee assistance programs, where you can literally call and just say, "Hey, I'm struggling with alcohol," whatever your issue is, and it doesn't even have to be related to work. It can just be any issue, and then they have counselors who are there to help support you.
Also, I want to say one thing. This is more regarding like therapists too. I remember this place when I was working as an hours worker, and this one lady was talking about how our systems mess up, which, okay, yeah, she's right. But then she said something where, like, how it's messed up in the sense of if therapists find themselves struggling with a severe mental health issue and they have to send themselves to the ER, they're no longer allowed to work in the field for 7 years.
Wow.
Oh.
I later, and I'll get Rebecca, tell me what you think, but I later found out that's not true.
So I feel like if there's going to be any mental health organization that you work, that a person works for, that's going to discriminate you based on your mental health status, whether or not you're a therapist or a client or a HR person or what have you, mm-hmm. that's discrimination.
Yes.
And I don't care if you have a mental illness. I don't care if you don't, but just saying to someone, you can't come back to work because you went to HR or because you went to the ER because of a mental health issue. That is discrimination. That is grounds for a lawsuit. And I'm not afraid to fight that if that ever happens to me.
But that's the thing. Like when you, I'm sorry, I'm really trying not to call this lady stupid or whatever, but like watch your freaking mouth. Don't say things because people are going to listen to you and take it to heart. There's lots of therapists out there who are afraid to go get help at the ER because of the fact that they may lose their career. So it's, you know, it's powerful. So if you don't know what you're talking about, keep your mouth shut. And I get really irritated with this. And, because you could be costing someone their life.
Yeah. And like, Jacob, I just have to say also that like, if I do, am selected to speak at this conference, I'm going to bring that to attention and just say, you know, it is completely unfair to expect the therapist to have perfect mental health if they're working with people who have terrible mental health, you know, because it would be like saying, oh yeah, my primary care physician just had a heart attack. So therefore they're not, you know, able to practice medicine anymore. They're getting their license taken away from them because they just had a heart attack or a stroke. It's like, you can't do that to people who work in mental health. We are human. We have mental health issues. Everyone has mental health issues. How can you discriminate against people who know mental health issues better than other people? It doesn't make any sense. It's the most hypocritical, ridiculous thing I've ever heard of.
Oh, and absolutely. If
you know, before I die, like kind of like my life's mission, so to speak, whatever, you know, my goal in life is that before I die, and I could die tomorrow, but before I die, I want to make it very known to mental health clinicians to not discriminate against each other and treat each other so poorly. Because we treat each other like shit.
Oh my God, we do. It is so
we are horrible to each other. And that is the saddest thing. And that's what I'm talking about self-care.
We talk shit about each other all the freaking time.
But the thing is that's the self-care piece. Like self-care is caring for yourself and others who are in the same boat as you. Why are we against each other? We're in the same boat. We're trying to help the same clients. Like, hello.
It's so egotistical where I'll hear other therapists talk about other therapists. And it's not so much even like self-care. It's like their skills, like, oh, that therapist sucks, or they don't do things right, this or that. Or there was like an EMDR incident, and I had a friend tell me like she got EMDR from one person and then went to another therapist and explained how the EMDR went. And the therapist like, oh, that therapist doesn't know what they're talking about. They did EMDR wrong. Well, it's like, how the hell do you know? How the hell do you know?
Oh my God. It's like, are you the instructor? No, so shut up.
Yeah, it's like, and you're taking the word of a client, which I'm not calling clients liars or whatever, but so you don't know how that EMDR session went or whatever. And one, going back to this experience, she had like two sessions with the therapist. So of course she did not get the full EMDR experience. Okay.
Right.
But it doesn't mean that she did it wrong.
Right. I feel like, so like all those workplaces that are toxic, I think that they're just going to like burn themselves to the ground, honestly, like in their toxicity. Like they're going to get to the point of where there's so many clients are going to be so pissed off about the horrible care that they're receiving that they're literally just going to, the company's just going to die over time. Because you cannot treat clients if you're treating yourself poorly. You cannot treat clients well with care and ethical concern, you know, ethical actions and concern if you yourself are treating yourself poorly and your colleagues poorly, you cannot. It just doesn't work. It's like, it's a dead end. And so I feel like those companies that we're talking about, which I'm not going to say at all who they are, but we all know what they are, those companies are basically going to burn themselves into the ground.
So to clarify, was this like a psychology popularizer or one of the people that speak at your conferences with regards to the comment about if you go to the ER, you have to not practice for 7 years?
Oh, so again, I won't say the company's name.
Okay.
She was a therapist from Canada, and she moved to the United States. And I don't know if she's like familiar with our laws and everything. She seemed to be, though. I mean, I'm not going to hold it against her that she's from Canada and that she doesn't know anything about our laws. Because I know there is a thing in our field, and I don't know if it's part of the addiction field, where if you do something violent, either at work or in your personal life or whatever, like there is some 7-year thing where they put you on hold. And that's for all
workers. I've never heard of that.
It's not just like therapists, it's also techs too.
Interesting.
The reason I don't want to get too much into this, but like there is a coworker of mine who, let's say, did something bad to a significant other and posted it on Facebook saying, "I'm sorry, baby, I'm sorry." Well, another coworker, I think it was like the lead tech or whatever, saw that on Facebook and made the report. So he was gone.
Oh my God. And that's slander.
It was 7 years that they say he has to be gone for.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
On whose part? The guy's part or the coworker?
Well, no, I just think that the fact that
it's sticky.
I think that, okay, well, the whole thing is terrible, but I think that the coworker that found the Facebook post and then told the boss.
Yep.
That is like a breach of like privacy. You don't go. What does that have to do with work?
Can I say one thing? Yeah. I think there's literally, like, again, I'm not naming the place, but like two people who I worked with, especially that one, where she would just like add all of her coworkers as like Facebook friends. And again, mm-hmm. we think nothing of it. You know, I think about it a lot now, how I would not.
Yeah. Do that. Oh, I don't add anyone.
But on my Facebook. I really think that she did that just to keep tabs on everyone, to be Facebook friends with them.
Wow.
So well, things like that, like they could see posts and stuff like that.
See, that should just be looked the other way, because like there's so much just drama and stupid bullshit on Facebook that things can look a certain way that they are not necessarily a certain way. Things can be misinterpreted. It's completely not a work related anything. It shouldn't have nothing to do with work. However, if it happens at work, like for example, if this colleague of yours is harming his significant other while they are at work, place of work, and then posts on Facebook, and then the colleague at work sees the mm-hmm. post, that's totally different. But in everyone's personal lives, when they're not at work, that's free game. That should not have anything to do with work whatsoever. And the fact that person got in trouble, that's terrible.
That's actually very common though, because I remember it was not in the mental health field, but like one of my college teachers was like telling me about like these examples where this like principal, whatever, was like drinking with his family on the boat. And it was just like, he was partying pretty hard. It looked like,
yeah.
And he was with his family and his kids, and these like his family members were pouring liquor in his mouth. Well, somebody got a hold of that picture on Facebook and reported it to the administration. So the administration told them, you can either get fired or you can resign. Those are your choices.
That's his personal life, though. It has nothing. If he was on a work boat, you know what I mean? Like if he was right. like at a work party, that'd be different.
So maybe he could have fought that report. I don't know.
I swear. Like these days, I don't know about you. Okay, what do you guys think about this? Do you guys think that since like post-pandemic, we're actually not even post-pandemic yet, we're still in the pandemic, but I'm saying like, you know, post like 2020, let's say, right?
Yeah.
Would you guys say that like legal issues, like the legal matters, things that involve the law, things that involve like legal action, whatever, amongst like workplaces or like politics have just kind of been like twisted and are like totally out of control and are not ethical, are not based on facts, are not based on like evidence, they're just corrupt. Would you say, I feel like that's what's going on right now. Like, whatever happened to, like, sound, reasonable, ethical, logical judgment? You know what I mean?
I think it's that. And I also think it's, like, the people who are in power making these decisions, mm-hmm. it's partially, like, them and their mentality and personality and who they are as a person as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I agree.
Yeah, like, I've heard that. I mean, it's hard to get inside his head, but Vladimir Putin, like, since the pandemic, it's I've heard that hypothesis put forward that the pandemic has messed with his mind and he doesn't seem to be thinking as clearly as he might, and that's one of the reasons why we're having what is going on in Ukraine right now.
I don't know. I feel like it's really hard to have a healthy interactions with others, and a healthy way of living, and healthy body, and healthy everything when you're in such a sick environment. Mm-hmm. And I feel like the United States is a very sick environment right now. We're very, very ill here. Mm-hmm. Physically, mentally, emotionally. And it makes it very hard to do, like, things that are good. You know what I mean? Things that are, like, helpful for others, good for yourself, good for your body, you know, like, you know, just, it makes it's like this barrier or challenge that, like, didn't used to be there. I don't remember being there, like, when I was, you know, in my 20s.
Right. No, it's this, I heard this interesting quote from a philosopher I forgot where it was from, but it mentioned how if, when it comes to war and destroying the other country, your enemy, the best thing is not to actually fight them. The best thing is to let them destroy themselves.
Yep.
You don't even need to, like, fight them because they're so chaotic and toxic. They're going to take themselves down.
Mm-hmm. That reminds me of a quote of, I think it was something like, when you don't know what to do, do nothing. Just be.
The one thing I know about war is, which is not much, George Washington. And you look at the amount of deaths that happened for Americans during the American Revolutionary War. And a good deal of them were actually hygiene related deaths.
Oh,
so that's kind of a tangent, but so for that reason, he was kind of a very, very disciplinarian when it came to proper hygiene within his troops.
Interesting. That makes sense, actually.
Yeah.
Well, Rebecca, before we head out, do you have anything else to process and?
I guess I would just like to say that, as kind of, again, I'm going to use the word downtrodden, as many of us therapists are right now. Mm-hmm. I do have to say that I still see hope within the community, and that I feel like what needs to happen is some leadership. I feel like there needs to be some leadership that needs to take place, which I'm happy to start. Yeah. I feel like, alongside leadership, there needs to be compassion. And, like, I think if you just start with those two things, you can go really far.
I agree. And like you said, how ironic it's that we're in the mental health field and we're doing this to each other.
I know.
It doesn't make sense.
I know. Well, it's kind of like, you know, the animal that's been abused starts to bite its own tail off.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Well, no, you just heard that, like, you know, they're like the parrots that are caged. They start to pluck them their feathers out.
Yeah,
it's like a being or rather an entire community of people that are so, you know, just doused in negativity. We're starting to erode and eat ourselves away. So, but I feel like that's kind of maybe part of the process. So, I do see though good things happening. In like 10 years.
Yeah, keep the faith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully I'll still be alive. So yeah,
me too.
We'll see.
Well, again, Joey and Rebecca, thank you so much for being on the show. It was a blast. It really was.
It was so much fun.
Well, just right off the bat with Joey, if any of my listeners want to get a hold of you, is there like a number or an email they could use to make contact with you?
They could definitely message me on LinkedIn.
Yeah, and I'll put your LinkedIn link on the show notes as well, so they know. And Rebecca, I know you're a former guest, but if there's like information or contact information you want to give out.
Yeah, I have a work cell phone that I just use for just like work. So that's totally fine that people contact me on that. I can tell you that number and then you can post it if you want.
Yeah, or your work email too. And
yeah, and then my work email, it's Rebecca, it's R-E-B-E-C-C-A @ and then lightlifemn.com. So spelt exactly how it's spelt. So L-I-G-H-T. And yeah.
Well, again, thank you, everyone. I had a blast.
Thank you so much, Jacob.
Thank you.
Good to see you, Joey.
Absolutely.
I do want to give a special thanks to Rebecca and Joy for an awesome BHI episode. And I just want to thank all of my listeners for being very supportive of me. And again, I just want to express that the content expressed in this episode was not meant to be taken as therapeutic advice. But if you do find yourself struggling with any type of mental health or addiction issues, please seek the care of a licensed medical doctor and a licensed mental health therapist. All right, everyone, thank you and have a good day. Bye.